This is Sheila Bender, and you are listening to In Conversation, Discussions on Writing and the Writing Life. Today, we are talking with two poets, Kelly Agadon from the Olympic Peninsula and Martha Solano from Seattle. They together wrote and published a book called The Daily Poet, which has day-by-day prompts for your writing practice. It's always of interest to me to talk with people who have collaborated on a project. Kelly is an award-winning poet, writer, editor, and essayist. She's the author of Letters from the Emily Dickinson Room, which won the White Pine Poetry Prize and was chosen by Carl Dennis. She was the winner of Forward Magazine's Book of the Year Prize in Poetry and a finalist for the Washington State Book Award. Letters from the Emily Dickinson Room was also chosen as one of the 20 best books of poetry for the Goodreads Reader's Choice Awards. She's the author also of Small Knots, Geography, and is co-editor of Fire on Her Tongue, an e-book anthology of contemporary women's poetry. She is the co-founder of Two Sylvias Press and was the editor of Seattle's Crab Creek Review. Her third collection of poems, Hourglass Museum, is out from White Pine Press, along with the book we're going to be discussing today, The Daily Poet, A Day-by-Day Guide to Creativity, which these two women poets have co-authored. Martha Solano is the author of four books of poetry, What the Truth Tastes Like, Blue Positive, Saturnalia Books Prize winner for The Little Office of the Immaculate Conception, and Reckless Lovely is another book of hers. Her poems have appeared in Poetry, Paris Review, North American Review, Plowshares, Kenyon Review Online, Prairie Schooner, The Cincinnati Review, Agni, and over two dozen print anthologies. She is co-author with Kelly Agadon of The Daily Poet, Day-by-Day Prompts for Your Writing Practice. She is a current editor of the Crab Creek Review, and she teaches at Bellevue College in Bellevue, Washington. Good morning, Kelly. Good morning, Martha.
Hi, Sheila.
Good morning.
I am very eager to talk with you not only about your own work, but about the conception of The Daily Poet and how it came about, how you came to publish it, and how you use it now, both as poets and teachers, and what you've learned about other people's use of the book. So let's start first with Kelly. Can you tell us how this idea hatched?
Well, it hatched very organically because Martha and I would meet a lot to write and do writing exercises together, and we would meet in coffee shops and say, okay, you bring five or seven exercises and I'll bring five or seven exercises and we'll do writing prompts and we'll write poems from them. And we started to realize that we were generating quite a few of these exercises and decided it might be interesting to put together a book of writing exercises for other people to use because they were so helpful for us.
Great. And Martha, can you address this idea that once you both decided you would change your own practice into a practice that would lead to a book, did it change any of the way you went about choosing prompts?
We were always careful because even an audience of one is an audience that's important when you're bringing in prompts. We wanted to sort of outdo each other and how much fun could we have. I mean, really, it was all about how much fun we could have together and make the whole getting together, you know, not just to have coffee, but to actually get some writing done during the day. So it was really Kelly who said, hey, Martha, you know, we need to do this. We need to put these out here. We're having so much fun and it's not fair to not be sharing this. So it was really Kelly's idea. And then the hard part was writing each, you know, splitting the year. It was one thing to do a few a month and then all of a sudden have, what is it, you know, 187 to write or something. But she's a good whipcracker. And we got it done. Yeah, no, it was the fun part was when we'd get together because we'd be different parts of the state working on it. And then when we'd get together and we'd do our test kitchen where we'd try them out and some would have to get thrown out or revised or some were winners. So we were all along as we had our little mini goals along the way to get this book written, we were always trying them out.
Were you trying them out with yourselves or with other people writing?
Well, most of the time it was just the two of us. We hadn't really shared with too many people we were doing this. I think we were keeping it quiet because we weren't sure we'd ever finish it. We saw young children, and it was all kind of this fantasy that we'd ever have a book. And then suddenly we're halfway through, and then all of a sudden we were done. I still can't believe that we got finished because it was very much fly by night, you know, when we could fit in time to do this with our busy lives.
And also living on different sides of the water at that point, Martha?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So getting together
was really...
Were children involved? Were you getting together?
Yeah.
Oh, how did... Kelly or Martha, who would like to take this question? Kelly, it sounds like you.
Kelly, go ahead.
There is a ferry. There is the Puget Sound between Marty and I. So there were ferry rides, and sometimes she would come over here, and we would ride either in my shed or on my deck, and sometimes we'd walk to the beach. And then sometimes I would go over there, and yeah, a lot of it had to depend on if my husband could pick up my daughter or if her husband could pick up her kids. And there really is that balance as we both work, we both write, we both have families. So there's always that balance. But we did find time and we worked it in.
All right. Well, there's only now beginning to be writing about mothering and writing, that there's been work about being a woman writer. But the idea of being a parent and a writer, a female parent and a writer, is something that I'm just discovering has some press at this point. It sounds like the two of you were a special partnership to keep all this going at a time when children were involved and also ferry rides. You must have had a high commitment to writing together. So, Martha, can you talk about how you know when you have the right writing partner?
There's a certain amount of trust, I guess. It takes a little while to build where you know you're putting out something. You're going to be taking risks. There's nothing like that when you realize, oh, I could throw anything out on the page and this person is either going to laugh, find the one good line and tell me. And we just throw all the critiquing out the window. I mean, It takes a while to trust that you've got a partner like that who just knows what we're there for.
Wonderful.
The poem will get fixed later. There's none of that, like, having to explain that. And then also even with the exercises being how outlandish they were, which I hope we brought into the book as well, taking risks with the kind of setup we wanted to put in. So, yeah, Kelly and I have known each other the lives of my oldest and her only child. So if we count our friendship by those years, it's been very valuable. Let me put it that way.
Well, I like what you said, Martha, about how it is you identified that Kelly was the right writing partner for you. So maybe this is a good time, if you'd like to read one of your poems that came from a prompt or caused you to have a prompt and kind of share that.
So the May 6th prompt was actually, I can remember exactly where I was when Kelly gave me this exercise. The book, I don't even know if we started the book, but on May 6th, it became the May 6th exercise. Large subject, small poem, and I'll read the exercise. It's very short. Make a list of five of the largest things you can think of, such as an elephant, a skyscraper, a planet, or the universe. Your list may also include large abstractions, such as an ego or appetite. Now write a poem of four lines or less about the big subject. So my poem ended up being about 14 lines, but I remember writing the first draft of this in Kelly's shed, and it's called Size. What she thought was large, a 64-ounce big gulp, boxcars creeping from one end of town to the other, Jupiter's red spot, the silvery, sweeping pinwheel galaxy, are tinier than the tiniest bone in a pygmy shrew. Big, it turns out, is 300,000 light-years wide, a dark corona surrounding the Milky Way, which it wears like the halo of an angel in mourning, a childlike penumbra, a gypsy's funereal kerchief, 10 times the size of every visible star, every trace of dust, gasp of gas, each planetary speck. Try that on for size. Try on the black babushka beyond which everything else is shroudless mycoplasma. This is the size of her thoughts as she walks down row after row at the tomb of the unknowns, lowers her uncloaked head.
Wow. Thank you.
So that was thanks to May 6th, Kelly's beautiful exercise.
So it is very intriguing to have that contradiction in there of the largest to write a small poem.
Mm-hmm.
Your poem, Martha, is got to be longer than four lines, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we talk about the book being a these are prompts are all just jumping off places. We don't expect anyone to do it. There's no such thing as a right way. You can shirk off the exercise 5 minutes after you start, 2 minutes. It just, that doesn't matter. They're just there as a starting point. I think that poem really does prove it.
And it gives permission. The idea that you only have to write 4 lines means it's not intimidating. Just start. And if you start with something that then intrigues you, obviously you can go on and on and on and write quite a different poem. But I think the idea of writing in 4 lines, it puts an interesting pressure on, but it also is an invitation to, don't worry, it's not going to take too long. So really nice work. And Kelly, do you have a prompt in a poem you'd like to share?
I do. Now, this is an interesting prompt because Martha and I did have a lot of exercises written, but we had to divide. We decided we wanted a prompt for every day of the year, so we divided the year up. And so we would have to write prompts for every day. And one thing that we started doing was researching what happened on that day to kind of inspire a prompt to keep us fresh. And so I'm going to do the October 25th prompt, and I'll read it to you. It's called Picasso It. And the prompt is, today is the birthday of Pablo Picasso, born in 1881. To celebrate Picasso's abstract artwork, write a poem about something abstract, love, kindness, hatred, soul, afterlife, etc., using very concrete images, visual elements, and colors. Or ask yourself, if your poem were a Picasso painting, what would it look like? And I was working on a book called Hourglass Museum, which uses art and artists as a jumping off point. And so for me, that exercise was perfect. And it inspired this poem, which is in Hourglass Museum, called How to Make a Picasso Cocktail. How to Make a Picasso Cocktail. The passionate people confront her. It's after midnight, and the artist fall forward, fall onto the balcony with arms open. She's mixing drinks, serving many quiches to party guests who'll say, give me a museum and I'll fill it. Cognac, lime juice, 5 teaspoons of sugar, 1 is optional. Sugar is always optional. She shakes vigorously, chills herself as Picasso pounds at the back door. She's deciding whether or not to unlock it. The passionate people will serve her well. Well drinks with the hopes Salvador Dali will drop in. It's after midnight and she's thankful for the sweet and seductive. Lucky when she can be more than one, when she can be the artist and the cocktail. Be the mini quiche in a world of biggie fries, biggie drink. The passionate people never forget when they create, they save themselves. A heart attack becomes an almost heart attack. Take me, I am the drug. Some days she almost dies from an overdose of satisfaction. She pours sugar on her life and drinks the artist's marrow in the bone of her glass, and she lives.
Thank you, Kelly. And thank you for the history, too, of the prompt. I'm in love with the phrase, an overdose of satisfaction. That's what I'm feeling listening to both of your poems. I think you may be able to read. We have time for at least another round of this. So, Martha, do you have another prompt to share and another poem?
I was going through last night, and I found February 24th. Amazing how you write things and then you forget you even put them in a book. The prompt for February 24th was if you could be anybody, and it was just a prompt. It's very simple. It's just write a poem that answers the question, if you could be anybody, who would you be? And then it says you may have one or more answers. Feel free to make this a list poem. And then my poem is, there's a little excerpt from it, and I don't know if I'll read the whole thing, but kind of long, but I'll read some of it. If you could be anybody, who would you be? And that's when she gave him her answer, Hatshepsut, the only female pharaoh, who by the luck of her father's early death managed to rule for 22 years. Or else, if not her, than the last person who died with the secret recipe for embalming bodies. Which wine, which incense, when resin, when honey, when rubbing with grease, which thorny tree of the boar edge. That's when she gave him, or maybe Thomas Edison on the day he invented the phonograph, telegraph tape set at high speed, emitting human speech, paper speaking, and I'll just go down a little. Gold, silver, bronze, floor, bars, or beam, who even remembers? And anyway, she'd rather be the chalk dust lifting after the champion raises her hand to signal she's ready to vault, or the moss between the patio bricks, a moose, an alpha wolf, a stealth. Nothing camouflage, nothing too outrageously flamboyant, nothing requiring slaughter or stench. I've decided, she said, and that's when she gave him that impossibly loose-lipped flower, white destined to dirty brown, to flop on the ground for the girls to load their buckets for petal soup. Because who'd give a camellia less than a 10? Who'd reject a blossom? Though why hadn't she answered nobody but nobody else? Because really she loved her own aorta, her own prismatic ulnus, was most content in her own cage with the 26 bones of her foot. Not platypoid, not tarantula eyes, just a smidgen spooked by King Tut's bulbous belly, knocking knees, ghostly glowing teeth.
You are listening to In Conversation, Discussions on Writing and the Writing Life on KPTZ 91.9 Port Townsend. Sheila Bender's interview with poets Kelly Agadon and Martha Solano continues.
26 bones of the foot. Wow. that almost spawns another poem, I think. Thank you for those wonderful images. So that prompt was about if you could be anybody, who would you want to be?
Yeah.
Did I have that right? Nice. And whose prompt was that? Do you remember who offered that one between the two of you?
Well, it's February, so it must be me.
Oh, you did it by the month.
Sometimes I have to think. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we divided the year.
I see. That's how.
Yeah, Kelly had January.
Well,
but it's just funny now when I look at the book. I can hardly remember whose month was whose. They just sort mm-hmm. of, they just kind of blended together really well. The other editor from Two Sylvias was kind of amazed at how it all came together that way.
I am not. I think when you find the right collaborator, it is as if you're working as one person. And so maybe before we get to Kelly's second poem, we could talk just a little bit more about the structure of the book and how you came to publish it, and tell you, obviously from the title, The Daily Poet, Day by Day Prompts for Writing, for your writing practice. Doesn't seem actually that it needs to be just poetry. So I want to get to that, but as poets, and we know now the history of poets who formed a kind of bond and union to keep yourselves writing during this time of working and having kids, you divided up the year and each took a month mm-hmm. of prompts for every day of that month. So suppose getting February was a little stroke of luck, right, Martha? If it wasn't a leap year, you got saved by a couple of days.
We did do February 29th. We do have 366.
So. All right. Okay, good. So you just saved a day. All right.
Yeah.
And at the time that you both were creating this book and conceiving of it, I'm interested to know, Kelly, I know that you co-founded Two Sylvias Press, which published the book. So mm-hmm. had you already had your press, and were you already prepared to do publishing, or is it something that happened after you created the book?
Well, our press kind of was an accident, the way it came to be. But we had the press in place. My partner, Annette, she was the one that actually started to encourage me to talk to Marty about it, about doing this book. She kind of put that in my mind. I thought, yeah, that is. We do have all these prompts, and they would be helpful for other people. Then we knew that Seattle was going to have the AWP, the Associated Writers Program, the big conference here. And we wanted to have it done before that. So that kind of really pushed us, because I did a lot of these exercises in the summer, which is really a time that I don't normally write. So there was that kind of excitement, knowing that we wanted to get it out before that. And I think we wanted it out before Christmas, too.
So by having it out, then, do you think this book appeals to people outside of poets or people wanting to write poetry?
Well, yes, actually, because we published it. It's The Daily Poet. But what we have friends who write nonfiction and essays and who write fiction. And a couple of them contacted me after, and they said that they've been using our book to write short stories and to prompt journaling. So it's been really interesting to see that. I think many people are just looking for a prompt or something just to get them started. So when they arrive at the blank sheet or the blank computer screen, they have a place to start with, a little bit of a map.
Good. I see that. And I'm glad people are reaching beyond the word poet and realizing that in all kinds of writing, there's a little bit of the poet in us. So, Kelly, can you read us a prompt in another poem?
Yes. And, well, it's funny that you mentioned February 29th and leap year, because that's actually the prompt that I chose. And it is one that Marty wrote. And it's perfectly titled for leap year. It's called Leaping. And here's the prompt. In honor of leap year, draft a descriptive poem that leaps from image to image. As you revise, infuse your poem with passion and aliveness, and then take it a step further, pushing towards surrealist free association. Whether you are describing a mushroom or a drive to the country, your goal is to make the ordinary fresh and unusual. And I love that idea of making the ordinary fresh and unusual. And again, I was still working on this collection of poems, Hourglass Museum. As you know, an ekphrastic poem is a poem about a visual artwork. And I was really interested in Joseph Cornell, and he had this, he would do those boxes, and one was called Fortune Telling Parrot. And I love that box, but I couldn't get into writing the poem. And this exercise that Marty wrote opened it up, because it allowed me, I think the word was surrealist. So it allowed me to take this poem and actually make the fortune telling parrot talk. So that's the poem I'm going to read that was spurred from that exercise. Fortune-telling parrot. To be the master of your own fate means sometimes you have to rip up the instruction manual. Sometimes it's a Bible. Sometimes it's a drawing of success. The parrot said travel. The parrot said flight. It described my life as a roller coaster, though I prefer bunny hills and kitty cars. And I've tried to stop asking parrots and carnivals to solve my problems. The parrot told me all emergency exits lead to museums. The parrot found my pocket watch, told me to be happy for what I have. Stop trying to be responsible for everyone. The parrot squawked, read spontaneously. What the parrot really wanted was to be held. And maybe that's what we all want, to know the theme parks in our minds are really just a hall of mirrors. Sometimes we have to determine our own emergency. When we ride the roller coaster while in love, we become the breeze.
Thank you. A wonderful poem for February, for Valentine's Day as well.
Thank you.
Yeah. Martha, I'm going to give you a turn here to tell me something I'm interested in. It's really, as you know, with your poetry books too, really something when your book goes out into the world without you, but then you begin to hear about how it's being received and how it's being used. So I wonder if you have something to say about perhaps the most gratifying information you've heard about how people, maybe even your own students, are using your book.
Oh, that's a great question. I did have one student get, she was so excited, and I said, well, write an Amazon review, and she did. I'm looking at her review, and she just said she found it was an amazing find. She's written about nature, famous paintings, science, writers. She was pumped enough to just contact me and just say, hey, I just want to say I love this book, which made me so happy, because to use your own book in a class always a little bit risky. Another thing was when we got our review from the Huffington Post, which was done by Jeb Harrison, right after the book came out, and he talked about how, because we really are a writing society, once again, in a way we never haven't been since, you know, the dawn of the telephone, that we've really got to know how to write. I mean, it's all about texting. It's all about email right now, you know. And so he advocated our book as one that helps everyone be a better writer, and not just, obviously, this review is not aimed just at poets. It's a book for when you're at a loss for words. say, on a second date or during a dinner conversation, and that we spend two-thirds of our time online, and most of it is not talking. It's writing. We're writing a ton. So we were both really heartened by this review going out into the world, seeing that our book was way more than just something just for poets, even though, and writers. I mean, he did acknowledge also that it's a great book that can be used year in and year out for writers, because you could pick up anywhere. You can do it over and over again. It's not like it wears out.
Right.
You can keep visiting even the same prompt year after year and see where you are in 1 year when you try that prompt. So anyway, that was really exciting feedback to get. We've been getting a lot of reviews on Amazon. There's always a new one up every time I go on. People are really just saying that they love it, and then it's keeping them writing. And that's the main thing, is that, as someone said, if you can't write, quote unquote, anything after buying this book, I'm sorry, but you have no excuse. I like that. So, yeah, we're getting a lot of positive feedback. We're really excited about it.
Good. Well, thank you for sharing that. And I'm sure a lot of the listeners will go check it out on Amazon then to read these comments. So, again, the name of the book is The Daily Poet: Day-by-Day Prompts for Your Writing Practice. And it sounds like we can read a lot about its reception on Amazon, which is also, I think, Martha, where your author page is. Am I right about that?
Yes.
Do you have another website as well?
Yeah, we both have. I have Blue Positive, which has all the information about upcoming readings and things like that.
And you blog on Blue Positive.
Yes.
And what is
the
subject of your blog?
Well, the writing life. I feature other poets. I run a monthly reading series in Seattle called Beacon Bards, and I often feature the poets who are going to be reading for Beacon Bards, or after the reading, I'll do a little profile of them. And it's just sort of what's going on for me, whether I discover a new poet during the books that I've been reading, things like that.
Well, thank you, because this is another resource for people to learn more about the local-ish poetry scene. And mm-hmm. Kelly, the way to learn mm-hmm. more about your press and your work, I think, is to go to sylviaspress.com.
Yes, to sylviaspress.com. If you're a poet especially, we have a chapbook prize coming up, and it has all the books we've published on poetry and class and craft. And for my own personal website, it's agadon.com, which is agodon.com.
Thank you.
And that links up to everything.
And that goes back to, you said you're the Oni Agadon. So
I am there's a few of us. Yeah, I think there's five in the U.S.
Ah, wow. So before we end today, is there anything else you would like to share with us that we overlooked?
The only thing I have is that I also co-direct a writing retreat called Poets on the Coast with Susan Rich for Women Writers, which is in La Conner every year in September. And that's something, if anyone's interested, they could find out on my webpage. And that is another thing that I collaborate on. And I realize I'm a co-founder, a co-editor, a co-writer, and a co-director. And I realize I like to do things with my friends.
So
I believe in collaboration.
Thank you, Kelly. It's a wonderful way to keep yourself involved in the writing life, and by forming these connections.
And make it fun.
Well, that's one thing I want to end with. The fact that the two of you had so much fun writing this book together, it sounds like that influences the book, so that anyone picking up this book is going to also have fun. I think that's really key, because we come at writing so often thinking it's hard. And to hear the lilt in your voices and the fun you've had and what the prompts sound like, I think that the reason people are so enthusiastic in their reviews is because they are having fun. And so I want to thank you very much for being with us today and talking. I'll be looking up some prompts as soon as I get back home.
Great. Thank you, Sheila.
Thank you.
Yes, thanks so much, Sheila, for having us on.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to In Conversation, Discussions on Writing and the Writing Life with Sheila Bender. For more of Sheila's interviews, please go to Sheila's website, writingitreal.com/audio. In Conversation is produced by Sheila Bender and edited by Charlie Fleischman. Production coordinator is Mike Schlexer.